Hello, everyone. Merry New Year. It is 2017, and we are here with another episode of Podnuts Pro. This is episode number 92, and this is the 8 Mile of Podnuts shows, the M&M without one M. I'm joined tonight by Mr. Matt Rainey. Matt, how are you, sir?
I need a drink, but I'm pretty good other than that. Well, how about you?
I've had enough eggnog, so I don't need a drink. And we are missing our third, I just had the word right at the tip of my tongue and I lost it. Our third amigo, that was it. We are missing our third amigo, Martin Ovando, who is stuck working, which is what happens when you have the type of business that we do.
And we tried to get him to make what he was working on part of the show, right? To do a live repair. He's programming a router remotely. So he has connectivity issues or something.
Yeah. So maybe we'll do that one day. We'll do a live repair on the air and see how that translates. I guess if we had video, that would really make it better. And show.
Yeah, we have to have a play-by-play, you know, caller.
Yeah. So, alrighty, sir. So it's the new year. We've made it through the holidays. And how was your holiday season?
The season was okay. One of the reasons we haven't had a show in a while was I was sick a few weeks ago, so I couldn't make it. I think Martin was also sick.
Yeah.
But I spent some time sick. My wife was sick twice. Luckily, the kids weren't sick. So the kids aren't sick. It's all good with me.
I was perfectly healthy, so I can't sympathize with you guys at all. I'm down here, and we've had record heat temperatures, so no cold to speak of to get sick with.
I'm going to mention I saw a cartoon online, and it was a forecast of Florida, and I think it's tomorrow. It had the tomorrow circled, and the low was like 38, and the caption said, "Florida will have winter on Friday this year."
That's right.
Because one day it was low, and the rest it was hot again.
Yep, that is true. If you happen to miss work and sleep in, you might miss it.
Yeah, I like the cold. It doesn't get cold here often, but we are going to be in the 20s for the next few days, which is nice.
Wow.
But that'll probably make more people sick with the hot and cold, hot and cold. Mm-hmm. There's something going on in South Louisiana because everyone I know has been sick. So don't come to South Louisiana if you don't want something.
Well, if you want good gumbo and a nice Mardi Gras, maybe. But
yeah, everybody should be good by then because Mardi Gras this year is February 28th, for those who would like to know that. Although the Mardi Gras season starts now, the actual Mardi Gras is February 28th.
All right, look forward to that. So my Christmas was quite uneventful. The personal side of Christmas is, that was eventful because I gave my nephew a present this year that normally I would not have ever been involved with. But after a day of watching him play with it, I decided, you know what, I got him the present. I should at least be allowed to play with it once. The present I got him was a drone. And so
nice.
He was outside playing with it, and he never got the drone, you know, higher than, you know, maybe the second story of a house or whatever. Well, I decided that I would tempt fate and would allow the drone to soar. And just when I decided to do that, the wind picked up and took the drone back behind I was at my mom's house, and my mom has kind of like a little ravine behind her. Used to be a big open field, but now they've built a new subdivision back there. So it went over the ravine, over the ditch, into the next neighborhood. And I have no idea how I didn't hit a house. But it took us a good walk to go find my nephew's drone. And I broke just the tip of it. But it still functions. He's happy. And I'm done playing with drones.
See, and we have the Nextdoor app, which I'm sure people have heard of.
Yep.
We had that in my neighborhood, and it's funny because after Christmas, you see posts, hey, if anybody's seen a drone, let me know, because they all get lost and they get taken by the wind or something. And it's funny to see the post about people losing their drones.
We found ours, so no need to post.
But, yeah, Nextdoor app is good for lost pets and lost drones. That's all I see on there.
All right. So how do we want to get started today? We want to start with emails or stories?
We'll do some stories. And I got one that will lead into another one.
All right.
So I had a client call saying that they had a computer that they couldn't get into. So they were going to bring it by. So I'm thinking, okay, I got my standard tools, which I'll cover on how I reset local account passwords. But she brings it, and it's an old XP Dell computer. So I don't care what their problem is. This is good for any computer. I always just set it up and turn it on, right? I want to see what happens before I touch it. I want to turn it on and see what it does. Does it boot? Right, because I could boot to my CD right away, right?
Yeah.
And reset the password, but I want to, as good practice for any computer, turn it on and see what it does. So what happens? I turn it on, it boots right to the desktop. There's no password. There's nothing preventing me from accessing the files. So she was still in the parking lot. So I went outside and got her, and I showed her that it booted right up into Windows. She says, "Well, I don't understand that. It had a password." And I said, "Well, when's the last time you used this computer?" She says, well, let's see. It's been at my house in my closet since 2009. And before that, my daughter had it at her house for a couple years until she brought it to me. So I don't know if it's been used since maybe 2007. So it took her, 8 years to get this checked on. And this is apparently a lot of pictures and videos that they want to access. And she was... So for 8 or 9 years or 10 years, they couldn't access the files because they didn't bother turning the computer on.
So was that a situation where it's more than a yes or no question because you had to walk back out to the parking lot to get her?
Oh, you know what? I was with the Christmas spirit. I did not charge anything for this.
Nice. That's so
yes.
Nice.
Merry Christmas. But the same day, I had someone that did lock themselves out, and they told me it was a Windows 10 computer, and they set a local password, and she forgot it. Now this, okay, so part of this is my fault. Okay, I booted it up to make sure it has a password on it, but I didn't pay attention enough, and it was not Windows 10, it was Windows 8. And that's important because the way I reset passwords, when they have the UEFI boot, I boot to the Windows CD, and then when you're at the install prompt, you do Shift F10, you get a command prompt. And well, I'll put a link in the show note. But basically, what I do is, and it's I think it's a pretty common way to do it. You get to the command prompt, and you replace utilmon or utilman.exe with cmd.exe. So now you reboot the computer. You get to the login screen, you hit the little thing on the bottom left, the utility manager, and that brings up a command prompt now. And when you have a command prompt, you can do all the net user stuff. So I booted to a Windows 10 CD and did this. And when I clicked the little utility manager, nothing happened. And I thought, what happened? So then I look closer, and it's Windows 8. I said, okay. And another mistake I made is I copied CMD from the CD to the computer. So anyway, I did it with Windows 8 and I redid it the right way. But I'm guessing that the CMD version was different because it's Windows 10 instead of Windows 8. The CMD must have been different and Windows 8 didn't know what to do with it. So when I clicked the utility manager, nothing happened. So when I put the right Windows 8 CMD version, it worked fine. So there is a difference, apparently. I didn't check, but I wanted to go back and check Windows 8 versus Windows 10 CMD. And just look at the version number. I'm sure they're different.
Yeah, they have to be.
And that's all I can see of why it didn't work. Because then I just copied the Windows 8 version, and it worked fine. But that's not what I use for resetting passwords on the EUFI boot. If it's just an old Windows 7 or Windows XP, I use the NT offline password editor. I'm sure people have used that. But what do you use to reset passwords?
Well, I actually use a boot disk from a company called LSoft Technologies, and it's Active Boot Disk. And I don't remember when I started getting this. I got it several years ago. The website is lsoft.net, L-S-O-F-T.net. And it's actually a suite of utilities. So I use that for password resetting probably 90% of the time I use it. But it also has a file recovery feature, a partition recovery feature, some network utilities, CD, DVD burner. But I like it because, granted, I kind of like the GUI interfaces a lot of times. So I just boot up to the CD, go into the active password changer, and I can just see all of the accounts that it has in the system. So if I just want to reset the administrator account or even enable the administrator account, because as you know, in a lot of those systems, the admin account was always disabled by default.
Right.
So there's a place where you can check to enable the admin account. And I do that a lot of times if for some reason, you know, the first user account that they created is corrupt or is severely infected, I'll log in as the administrator and run all the utilities there and then disable it once I'm done. So that's the program that I use, Active. It's Active Boot Disk suite of tools, and the program inside of that is Active Password Changer. And you can buy it separately, but I just bought the whole CD. I buy it probably every other year. I purchase that.
Okay. So but another way I reset passwords is through the dashboard, through the LogicNow dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got the agent on there and you've got remote background enabled.
Yes. Yep.
I do like going in, because even if this person would have had our agent on there, I could have just said plug it into the internet. I could have done remote background under the same net user tools, which I've done many times for people who set local passwords and forget them. Because a lot of our clients, they're not joined to the domain because they're a field user and they're never at the office. And they forget their passwords, and I use the background feature to reset their local account if they forgot their password. And yes, you can use the net user tools to enable the administrator account too. I think it's net space user space administrator space / active / yes. That will enable it. Then you can reset the password.
Right.
I think you just do net space user space administrator space, and then whatever you want the password to be. But that's how I reset those passwords, the agent or that the Windows boot disk. If you need it, just make sure you use the right version of the boot disk. Unless you want to do it twice, like I had to.
Yeah. Another thing I like about the Active Boot CD is that it's easy to just hand to somebody and say, go boot with this and do that. I actually had to use it a couple of times last night. We were doing a network reconfiguration. We had a customer that had absorbed another office. It was a law firm. And we were installing new internet service, new phone service, new phone systems and handsets. And then we were taking the workstations and removing them from the previous company's network so that we can put them on the new network, because we did a completely new IP subnet structure. We put in a different router. I mean, we did everything new. The company didn't want to take anything from this previous company. So we literally installed the same Windstream internet service, the same Windstream phone system, down to the phones. They said the only difference is the old phones had a Paytech logo, the new phones had a Windstream logo, but they were the same exact phones. But going through the workstations, I had two techs working with me, and they were the ones demoting the workstations, getting them off the old domain. But one of the things that we had to do is to make sure that they had a local administrator account that they could log into. And we have a standard one that we use where we, you know, create a, you know, a backup admin account with our password. And a couple of times the techs would forget to make that backup admin the administrator, and then they would reboot, go in, and would be a standard user, and they wouldn't have privileges to do all the stuff they needed, like add printers and stuff like that. So,
yep. Yeah, what I normally do on that, and I tell my guys, if you're going to unjoin it from the domain, create the local admin account, log in with the local admin account to make sure it works, then unjoin from the old domain while you're logged in with the local admin. That way you know you can log in with the local admin. Because, yeah, so many times you forget that one little step. Although it is nice now on Windows 10, it tells you, hey, if you don't have a local administrator account, you may lock yourself out.
Right.
That's so nice of Microsoft. Of course, it doesn't stop you. What it should do is stop you from doing it if there's no administrator account. It should say, no, you've got to, you don't have one. You have to create one before we can even let you do this. That'd be nice, too.
It would be. But, again, we are talking about Microsoft.
One step at a time, I guess, right? Maybe that's in the next
baby
version.
Baby steps, yes.
You know, I've been getting a lot of Sage updates to 2017. I don't know if you have a lot of clients running Sage, but boy, Sage really is pushing out Sage 2017, and we got a ton of people having to upgrade that.
I think I have a couple, but I don't think I've actually had to worry about it because I'm trying to think. I don't remember what the product was. I think that they have a consultant that specifically works with them, so the consultants take care of that. I don't have to worry about it. I think one client may have Peachtree. That's still with Sage, right?
Right. Yep.
So, yeah, Peachtree stuff.
So here's one thing I did. You know, moving a lot of people to the dashboard, LogicNow dashboard, I've had a few problems coming from – we used to use Trend Micro, Worry for Your Business. That was our standard antivirus suite for businesses before using LogicNow. And I've come across quite a few times where you go uninstall Trend Micro from the server and Exchange services, mainly the transport service, will not start. Have you come across that? Do you use Trend Micro Worry for Your Business at all?
I myself have never used Trend Micro. We have taken over maybe two that had it. And I do remember having an issue uninstalling, but I don't think I have it with the Exchange transport server. So,
what I've seen is, it's funny because it'll uninstall fine. It won't give you any errors. It'll say, hey, I'm uninstalled now. So when you reboot, you don't see anything wrong because actually the transport service starts and then it stops right away. And if you try and start it, it'll say started and then stop. So if you're not careful, you won't even notice
right.
it until you get a call from your client saying, hey, we can't send or receive email. Because the information store is mounted, they're still connected. It's just the transport service isn't started, so nothing can come in or go out. So if you have that problem, first of all, if you're going to uninstall Trend Micro Worry Free Business, after you do it, make sure your Exchange transport service is started. Because if it's not, you've got to go on a command prompt utility. There's actually an agent inside, so an SMTP agent, in Exchange that you've got to go remove manually. You've got to run a command prompt, and I'll put a link in the show note. Uninstall dash transport agent dash identity scan mail routing agent and scan mail SMTP receive agent, which you're never going to remember. We'll put a link in the show notes because even I don't remember it. When I've had it happen, I know to check the Exchange transport service, and when I see it happen, I'm like, okay, I got to do a Google search and find that article again. But I've seen this happen many times. Once or twice is okay. You know, it's a fluke. I've seen this happen about half the time when I'm uninstalling Trend Micro. And it doesn't give any errors. It just, this agent doesn't unregister itself. It's still enabled. And since it doesn't exist anymore, the transport agent says, nope, I can't start. So beware of that. And I think it's going to happen more and more as people move to these dashboards. If you have Trend Micro, you have to get rid of it, and then you have to check on this.
Well, I can tell you that I don't remember having the issue with Trend Micro, but I do remember having to deal with this SMTP agent issue before. So, yeah, you're not going to remember what you did, but you'll remember that you had to do it because it's fun.
Yeah, so, yeah, at the Exchange console, you can type get dash transport agent, and you'll see a list of all the agents. So if you see something, this one says scan mail, but if you see another agent that you know shouldn't be there because it was an old AV product, then you know you got to get rid of that one. So, yeah, check on that. And what's funny is it gives the scan mail ones the highest priority one and two. And it's probably the same thing for other agents, for other AV solutions, is they're going to be there and they'll be the highest ones, yeah. And they won't exist anymore. So
that's right.
And the first four or five times, we didn't know to check it, right? We just got a call saying, hey, email's not working. Well, that's weird. We didn't do anything except uninstall Trend Micro.
Well, and the hardest thing to know, too, is that, you know, if you've got internal and external and, you know, you've got a ton of people, you know, they're just not going to know. They're just going to see mail disappear out of their outbox and think it's gone. So,
right. Yeah, because then you can look in the queue and it's a bunch of stuff in there. And then, of course, a bunch of stuff waiting to come in, too, on our spam filter. Hey, this is a funny problem. I'm going to see if you guess this.
Oh, no, on the test?
Yes. In fact, if anyone guesses this, I will be shocked.
Oh, well, way to get me all primed and ready here.
Maybe you'll get it. I want to know if you'll get it, because I don't know how you can get it. A client called, and they said their streaming media, the radio online, was not working. They can't play their music online. Now, of course, the first question is, I ask, can other people stream music? Maybe it's blocked on the router. Maybe somebody made a change and now we're blocking that content. And yes, it works for everybody else, just not me. My second question is, do you really need to listen to the radio at work?
That would have been my first question.
So, and then of course, my third question is, when did it stop working? And then she says, well, it works sometimes, sometimes it doesn't. What do you check? I mean, what do you check? I know what I check, but how would you check that?
Okay, so just a regular user, you're not doing the content filtering.
We are doing content filtering, but the same policy applies to her as other people, and other people can do it.
So, I mean, I probably would start with something with the sound. Like, did she put in, you know, headphones in the headphone jack or something, or dictation?
Yeah, so equipment. We can hear other sounds.
Right. Oh, she can hear other sounds.
Just not the radio. The radio is the only thing that's not working. She can play other system sounds. I can go to, I think we tried, you know, we put it, I think she had a DVD player. She could put a CD in and listen to music and it would play, just not streaming. And I can tell you what, I'm not going to drag it on, but I gave up. We gave up.
No.
And she also had another problem with a printer not printing correctly. It would lock up sometimes. Okay. So I said, well, let's look at that issue. Because, I mean, really, to me, the radio is not important. Really, I don't care. So let's move on. We go to look at the printer. It's an HP LaserJet, I think 1102 or something, one of those host-based drivers. Terrible local
printer.
Wow,
that's an older one. That needs to go away.
Yeah, it should. It needs to go away. So, uninstall the driver. So, you know, I want to uninstall and reinstall it. Uninstall a driver, and guess what happens? The radio plays.
Radio music?
Yeah, radio starts. All we did was uninstall the print driver. Reinstall the print driver. Now the printer works and the radio works. The next day, guess what's not working?
No more radio.
Uninstall the print driver. Radio starts working. What do you think about that?
So what would interfere?
I have no clue. I've never seen a print driver interfere with streaming media. Everything else works. Just the radio. The stream. I'm sure other streaming media wouldn't have worked either, but we didn't try it. But all you do, as soon as you uninstall the print driver, the radio start playing.
So the solution is obviously to get a new printer, right?
Yes, that's what I told her. Well, I told her, first of all, this printer is no good, because one of your issues was the printer keeps locking up. It keeps locking up her Sage program whenever she tries to print certain reports in Sage. So we need to replace this printer. And you know what she said? But I like this printer. It works. Well, except when it locks up and doesn't let you play the radio, it works. Right.
Except when it doesn't.
So she goes, well, I'm just going to keep uninstalling it as I need to. Oh, so I showed her how to uninstall it. So that's her solution. She's going to uninstall and reinstall it, you know, multiple times a day.
She's a local admin.
Yes.
Well, that's a number one strike right there.
Well, yeah, I know. I don't like that either.
So she's got, so there's two strikes on her. So do you have a three strike limit with your clients?
Oh, I've got a third strike on her. She also mentioned after all this that her account keep is locked out every morning. When she gets to work, it says your account's locked. I was like, okay, well, of all the problems, this is the main problem. This is what you should have mentioned first. let me look in the logs. I look in the logs, and of course, she has an open RDP to be able to remote in. And you know that, that the latest attack vector is people trying to remote in to open RDP connections. Mm-hmm. And they're actually using an RDP client. It's not a port scan. They're actually using RDP clients to connect to this. Yes. Because you can put in the WatchGuard router saying only allow Microsoft Remote Desktop Protocol to connect to this policy, and they still get through.
Right.
So, and I've researched this. What happens is these attackers are trying to find RDP sessions, and they will log into your computer through RDP and install a CryptoLocker variant on your computer. So you are not getting the link that you're clicking on. You're not getting an email that you're opening. They are actually logging into your computer and installing it for you. Saves you the trouble from clicking the link.
Right.
So she says her and another girl keep getting locked out every morning for the past week, and she just mentioned it. So, of course, I have to disable all the policies, set up the mobile VPN policy, show her how to connect on the mobile VPN before she can RDP to her computer. So nowadays, before, what we were doing is we were let them have RDP open, but we would put in the filter, the application control, to only allow Microsoft Remote Desktop to connect to the policy to prevent port scans. But that's not good enough anymore.
No, it's not.
You've got it. You've got to use a VPN or a static IP, right? I could say only allow this IP to connect. But at home, if they have a dynamic IP, that's not going to work.
No. And then that's a thing that we're having with our law firms, where we have several insurance defense firms. So they are being mandated by the insurance companies to protect their data. And one of the big things is to secure remote access. And they have literally spelled that out, that a couple of them, we're talking State Farm, Allstate, even retail, Walmart. One of my clients is a big Walmart defense company. And in their security requirements, it is you will have secure VPN remote access.
And see, before, the way they would check that is they'd do port scans. And the port, if it was only allowing remote desktop protocols, it wouldn't respond to that port scan, and they think it's closed. And they may still be doing that for their penetration testing, just do port scans. But yeah, you might pass a port scan, but I don't want people trying to log in.
No, you
over
don't.
RDP. And the main thing is, when people call us and tell us, oh, my account was locked, the first thing I do now is check and see if there's an RDP policy that they're connecting to. And you can ask them, do you connect from home? No. And I see a policy. Oh, I do sometimes. Okay, so you mean yes.
Well, not all the time.
Well, I don't breathe all the time. I mean, it's pretty constant, but I might hold my breath for a minute. But sometimes they say no, and I see the policy, and they just disable it. Because I'm thinking, well, they don't use it. If they say no, they don't use it. But then they call back saying, I couldn't connect remotely. Mm-hmm. And well, of course not, because you said you didn't do that. Oh, well, I do sometimes. Okay, so now we got to do a VPN, and we've got to do it. So remote access has got to be locked down to a VPN policy. Has to. With this latest attack, they are getting pretty sophisticated with how they're getting into your computer.
The future of security. They will infect your systems for you.
Yeah, we'll just log in and take care of that for you.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, the user doesn't like it, right? Because now they have to have an extra step. They've got to connect to the VPN.
Oh, of course.
Then connect to the RDP. Even though I tie it to Active Directory, so it's the same username and password as Active Directory, they just don't want to type it twice. Yeah. Then they've got to disconnect from the VPN. Oh, it's so hard.
Do I have to do that every time?
And when I tell them, I said, the reason you're locked out is because people, it's like letting someone sit at your chair in your office and let them log in. Just go ahead and try. That's what they're doing. They're just not sitting in your chair, but it's the same thing. They're just doing it across the internet. They're actually trying to log into your computer. We can't let that happen. So once they understand that, they're okay with it, but they still complain about having to do that. Mm-hmm. But
so I've got a question for you, and this will be much, much easier.
The print driver.
You are not correct, sir. So I got a call today from they're a customer, not a client, because we don't support them on a regular basis. We've supported them, I think, twice. A referral client that is basically a small little work group. I think it's four or five workstations with a peer server. So again, a law office, and the main attorney is the server for everybody else, and its case management system is on there. It's a database. I don't think it's SQL, but it's either Pervasive or one of those database type programs. He's got QuickBooks on there. They're using Outlook. And originally, when I went to go see them, it was because they were having trouble scanning and doing some other stuff, and they wanted us to evaluate their network. So we did, and we said, well, for the programs that you're using, we recommend a server. I didn't even really inspect their network too much, but it was just based on the software alone. You really should have a server. You know, that's a lot of work you're putting on the main workstation, especially if the attorney's complaining that it's slow. So sent them the quote, never heard from them until today. Today, the issue was, well, it's the main computer again, but this time it's freezing, but only with Outlook. So anytime, you know, all the other programs would work, and he would work in Outlook, and then Outlook would freeze. And we used to restart the computer, but now we just wait for it to unfreeze so that we don't have to shut everybody down, close out all the programs. So I said, well, let me look at this remotely, because my first thought was that maybe it was a hosted email Office 365 issue where the mailbox grew too big, where people let the local OST file get to, you know, that 49 gig limit.
Right. Obscenely large OST files.
So I log in, and I go, and basically before I look at anything, I go into control panel in mail. I didn't even want to open Outlook. And I just look for the account to see if it's an Exchange account, and it was not. Pop.
Ah, lovely.
So I'm like, okay, well, let me see the size of the file. Click on the folder location, open up the file location, and it's a 19 gig file. Pretty big for a PST, but not outrageous, but enough for me to think, okay, that's probably not good. But what really shocked me was I looked at the file location, and it's on a U drive, not in the regular C drive location for an Outlook PST file. And so I asked them, I said, so what happened here? Who moved this? Oh, well, he had a friend that came in to help us. And I said, okay, so where does the U drive go? So where I start poking around and looking, the U drive is on a NAS drive. And I said, well, this is not a supported configuration, so this is going to be a problem. And she said, well, we put the NAS drive in because we were told that this would help our problem. And so I asked them, what problem were you trying to solve? Well, all the problems that you told us we needed the server for, so this person told us that this NAS is a server, and that would fix everything.
So what do they call that person back?
So I'm going to stop right there and just let you tell us, how would you have handled the customer at that point?
I probably would have asked them why they don't call that person back.
I started to do that. I said, well, this sounds like your person needs to come back out. Well, he can't fix it, so we need somebody who really knows what they're doing.
Yeah, then I would say, okay, well, the solution is still the same. It requires the server. That hasn't changed. Just because you bought what you think was the right solution doesn't make it the right solution.
Yeah, so that's pretty much what I ended up telling him. I said, well, now the price just went up. I said, first of all, I have to revisit the pricing from before anyway, just because it's 6 months old, so I have no idea, you know, the models available, parts, all of that. I said, and we're going to have to reconfigure everything, because everybody can't have their Outlook on a U drive on a NAS box. But of course, she was like, well, isn't a NAS a server? And I said, no, it's network attached storage. And he said, well, he said it was a network server. And I said, well, he lied. And I said, and is this?
I would say, well, that's why he can't fix it, because he's not aware of what it actually is.
And we got to talk, and it turns out it's a friend. And so I had to stop and say, okay, I'm going to stop right now and say, we need to get the attorney involved, because we're not going to come in if there's a friend or family member involved in the technology. I'm not going to go down that road of having that person start to try to second guess what we're doing. And obviously, that's what you did before when I presented you a server quote. This person must have come along and say, oh, well, you don't need a server. You need a NAS. That'll solve your problem.
Yeah. Well, right away, they should know that he was wrong, because it didn't fix it, and now he can't fix it the correct way.
Right.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I would definitely have to make it clear that that person is not allowed to touch the network once you fix it. And of course, I'd make it a recommendation, not a requirement, to move to hosted exchange off of that POP email.
So that's a great customer. So we'll see if they actually call me back, because I told them, I said, I'm not going to put together a quote to even consider fixing this or re-quoting them a server until we have a discussion, because I told them, I said, I need to know that first. I wanted to know why they decided to use this guy instead of me, and if it was because of cost, I can understand, but if we're going to go down this road, it's still going to be a cost. And actually, when I was on the phone with her, we actually looked at the computer that he has, and the computer is from 2010. And I said, so he needs a new computer too. So it's going to be the cost of a server and a new computer and a reconfiguration of your NAS server. So I told her, I said, just think it's going to be a couple more grand to what it was before.
They're going to get their own server, and they're going to call you back when that server's not working right.
And at that point, I'm not even going to take the call.
You should go look at it just for some giggles.
Actually, I should, because their workstations are their custom-built machines. So maybe I'll get a custom-built server out of it.
Did the friend build those machines?
I don't know. I didn't ask if it was the same friend.
Well, they got a lot of friends over there.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a stack of emails.
We do.
It's actually a bigger stack than normal, since we haven't had a show in a few weeks.
And a long one, too.
Yeah.
Is that the one we want to start with?
Yeah, let's go with that one.
All right. So one of our good friends, Bradford Torrey. And let's see. Let's get to the good parts. So first of all, hey, Triple M Threat, TMT. So a nice nickname for us there.
But tonight it's just the double M Threat.
M&M. And the green M&M for good. So he writes, I love it when you guys pose a challenge to the group to puzzle over, and then present the solution that you had come up with based on your adventures. So here's one you can share. It happened a while ago, and I just saw it in my notes, so I hope that I'm remembering it exactly. Situation: a small network, 5 to 6 Windows 7 computers in a workgroup mode, have some maps drives on a NAS. Oh, just finished a NAS story. And have a map drive on a Windows 7 PC. I have a login.bat in the user startup folder. Blah, 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 blah. So that's the environment.
I like the condensed version.
One day, some of the PCs lost all of their mapped drives. So if a PC was affected, it lost both the NAS and the Windows PC connections. They wouldn't reconnect by running the login bat file. They didn't come back if I removed them, restarted, and let the login bat file run. Okay, so start pinging stuff. Ping the router for fun. Good. Ping the IP of the NAS. Good. Ping the IP of the Windows PC. Good. Ping localhost. Good. Okay, so clearly the network is working, but drives won't map. My quick fix was to change the pass in the login script from, and he basically puts the UNC drive and changes that from the UNC mapping to the IP address. That worked, but I just can't let that go. I gots to know. Why won't the drives map with host names?
So he didn't say if he pinged Office NAS, right? It's / Office NAS. He changed it to the IP address for the script, but did he try and ping Office NAS?
Well, I assume, you're right, he pings the IP of the NAS, but not the actual Office NAS name. So Bradford, just a point of contention in your story. Did you try that? But anyway, so, I mean, at that point, would you have continued on with the continuing of, I have to know the answer?
Oh, me? Yeah. You want me to read it?
Well, no, I'm asking you if you had got it fixed at that point.
Oh, at that point? Well, I would have pinged Office NAS. I think that would have told us if we could ping, right, because if he's running the script with a name, I'd want to ping the name. And that would really tell us what the problem is. Because if it maps by IP, to me it would not ping by name. is what I would think. And if it didn't ping by name, obviously it's a DNS issue.
Right.
Which, with Windows, it's almost always a DNS issue, right?
Yep.
Windows issues equals DNS issues.
Well, especially if you're on a network without a server. And I know that a lot of times I run into where they'll use the DNS of the router. And if it's a, you know, Comcast or whatever, you know, they're using basically public DNS, even if they switch it to Google DNS, which has nothing to do with what they're doing internally.
Yeah. So I'll go ahead and read his solution. But I'm thinking I would have liked to have known if he pinged OfficeNet.
All right, Brad, get back to us on that.
I would expect that it would not have worked, is what I would expect. So he says, I still don't fully understand this. I get what happened, but I don't understand why. I've never seen this before, and will probably never see it again.
Oh, that's probably not true. You will.
Because I've seen this many times, especially in smaller networks. We assign static IPs to everything in the office. Standard practice is to use reservations in the router, but I worked with a partner for a short time, and he did a lot of the setup in this particular office. He assigned static IPs on the PCs themselves. Now, that really shouldn't be that big an issue. I don't like it, but I don't have time to go around redoing everyone's work. So, I don't like static IPs.
I don't either.
The only thing that's have a static IP is your router and your server, or servers. Servers and router. That's it. Nothing else. So, let's see. But I guess sometimes, or maybe over time, a PC that isn't requesting DHCP info won't get a cache of NetBIOS names. This also shouldn't be a problem because a network request for a host name, like a ping, is a call out to the network. Does anybody know who this Office NAS guy is? And someone on the network will know, and they can reply back to the original requester with that info. Then the request can reach the destination. Routers, switchers, PCs can all store this type of info and share it in what he calls stupid layman terms anyway. So for whatever reason, no PCs had any cache of NetBIOS names. Try this on a PC with a static IP. Go to the command line and type nbstat --c. You might find the cache is empty. The fix for this, literally, is just do things the way you are supposed to. Put the PC back at the DHCP, reserve its IP in the router, and immediately everything was fine. It hasn't been an issue for 9 months now. So, that's the end of the email. Thank you, Brad. But, yes. Oh, I don't know if you need a reservation, right? You could just put it on DHCP. Unless you're doing something that it needs a reservation, you could just let the PCs pull up DHCP info, right? They don't, unless you're hosting some kind of service, they don't need to have static or reservation.
Well, yeah, it's funny because I do know that there are techs that will do that. For some reason, they have either grown up with the notion of, you know, workstations have to have static IPs. I don't do that unless I've got where I do have a couple of weird copiers that if they want to scan back to the local station, it will only scan to the IP address of the machine. And so I have to keep that machine static, but I do that with a reservation from the DHCP server or from the router. But other than that, I don't have any other reason to do that.
And that's exactly, I think I talked about it last show, was that person who couldn't scan. And then I found that they changed their router. So it's similar as a DNS issue because no one knew. They lost their reservations.
Right.
So, and that's one problem with those kind of routers. If you're doing reservations in a router, you really need to make sure you back up your config. Because if you lose the router, you're going to be redoing all your reservations instead of just restoring a config, right?
Correct. Or you're going to document. And a good place to go for documentation is
informedit.net. Correct. And in there, the router form would tell you, hey, back up your config. And where do you have that backup saved so you can know where you saved it? Because I've seen people back up their config and not be able to find it, which does you no good. And really, I think people who say they back up their config but can't find it didn't really back up their config. They just want you to think that they're not that stupid that they didn't back up their config.
All right. Email number two. And I'm going to read, hi guys, longtime listener and supporter. Love it. Love you guys. Great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think there was only two in there, but I got carried away. Matt, I can't listen to you without thinking of Lalo and all those great early shows. He was so much better than you and really carried the show. I hope he is doing well. How about a shout out to him? And in parentheses, he writes, I hope you appreciate my sense of humor also. With best regards and Happy New Year, Kevin.
Well, I can't disagree with Kevin. Lalo was great. I haven't talked to Lalo in a while, and I hope he's doing well. But I have one thing to say to Lalo, if he's listening, and that is, Happy New Year. And if you listen to the old shows, you know what that means.
All right. And I think I'm going to hold off on this last email and just tie it in all natural to the end of the show.
Okay, so one thing I want to mention is MSP World. MSP World 2017 is coming up end of March. I think March 26th, 27th, 28th. And it's in New Orleans, Louisiana this year.
New Orleans.
And I will be there. I've already registered. I've already got my hotel room. I will check it out. I've heard good things about this conference. I've heard very good things about this conference. So if anybody is going to be at MSP World this March, send me an email. Let me know. And you can just email matt@podnuts.com. Unless you also want to let Marvin and Martin, who will not be at the conference, that you'll be there too. You can email podnutspro@podnuts.com. But they will not be there. There will only be one of the three M's, unless they change their mind.
Unfortunately, I cannot change my mind. I already have a prior engagement.
Well, I will work on the other M. Maybe he'll change his mind. But I will be there. I've already registered, like I said. I will be there. Let me know if you're going to be there.
Right. And
should be a very good conference.
And we will add the link to the MSP World Conference to the show note. And you guys can go look that up and check out the agenda, the speakers, and register.
And it's about 4 weeks after Mardi Gras. You still may find some beads in the streets at that time, if you like picking up beads off the dirty ground. But that's what Mardi Gras is all about.
Hey, any way to prove you got the beads, right?
Right.
You don't have to tell them how you got it. All right. So I think we've done a good show. Martin, we miss you, and hope that your router configuration goes well, or went well, because by the time people hear this on the show, it will have been over.
I hope so.
Or else we will be doing a live show and all of that. All right, so we thank you all for listening and subscribing to the show. And Matt, any last words before we end off here?
You know, I had something I was going to say, and I completely forgot it. So I will say, thanks for listening. Happy New Year.
And I will end by reading this last email from Mr. Rob Berger, who writes, Hey guys, just a quick note to say I'm really enjoying the shows. Thanks for all that you do to inform, educate, and entertain us. Oh, I probably shouldn't have read this, but Marvin, if you ever run out of Ben Franklin quotes, you can always make them up. As Mr. Franklin once said, they don't think it, be like it is, but it do. Best wishes to you all, and have a happy holiday season. So that has nothing to do with the quote that I did have picked out, but I will try to read that again just so that everybody understands. They don't think it, be like it is, but it do. But the quote that I am going to end with is, a good conscience is a continual Christmas. And that is from our good friend, Ben Franklin. Thank you, everybody. Have a good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.